Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel. As always, joined by Joel O'Connor and Dennis Dick. Busy, busy news day. A lot to discuss. The Fox-Disney deal, finally official. We got that. Earnings from Pier 1. Target made an interesting acquisition. JP Morgan had a big downgrade to Valeant Pharmaceuticals. A lot of retail moving, a lot of stocks moving. Our guest today is at 8:35, going to be JC Peretz. He's the founder of All Star Charts. Joel, what's doing this morning in the market?
S&Ps are trading up from that all-time closing high of 26.69, even up $1.50 at 70.50. Keeping an eye on the all-time high from yesterday, 75.50. We also had Tuesday's high in that region at 73 even. You have crude down 35 cents here at 56 and a quarter. Gold continuing to rally up 10.40. Back at 1260, and silver back above 16 at 1606. And Bitcoin, it's just not as fun as much lately. It just doesn't move as much. Trading down 2% at 16,795.70. But Bitcoin Cash is trading up 20% at 1,916.
Do you have a chart on the Bitcoin?
Do I have a chart on the Bitcoin? I do, but I am working remotely today.
I've got the GBTC up. I don't know.
You can show the GBTC. Yeah, that's always tough, that's though, because it's got the premium and it goes up and down, so it's not as good. We'll get some charts for you tomorrow then, just to look at it, because I'm just curious on the technicals. Can you describe what it looks like technically, Joel, if you look at the chart?
Are you talking about the Bitcoin?
Yeah, the Bitcoin itself. Because all I'm thinking, and I don't have a chart of this up because I don't trade Bitcoin, and none of my regular equities charting software carries Bitcoin charting. So I'd have to go, I don't know. Where are you getting a chart from on it?
Okay. Well, there's coinmarketcap.com. Okay. That's a good place. And I'm looking at the Bitcoin chart there, going back all the way to July of 2013. Okay. Also, TradingView. Now, my buddy sent me some charts from TradingView, and I need to spend some more time on that site. I know it's a favorite of Nick's, but check out TradingView.com, Dennis, because it's right up your alley.
And they have Bitcoin charts, too.
Yeah, and they have all these other crazy ones, too. So, okay. But this is what the chart looks like. It looks like it's just dead from July 2013, and then you started the move in the middle of the year. And then it's just a parabolic move, but it's just hanging out. I was discussing.
What about the last couple of weeks? Because I've just got the chart in my head, and I always look for upside capitulation, the blow off top. And when you were texting me that one day, and it went to 15 and 16 and 17 and 18 and 19.5, and the last $1,000 was in a minute.
Yeah.
That felt like upside capitulation to me. Not that I'm a Bitcoin trader, not that I've ever traded it before, but I do technicals.
Dennis,
I got the chart in my head that felt like a blow off top.
I've got
and what that means
right
is
now.
That's when everybody says, I have to get in, I can't miss the boat, I got to get in. And then it came down 10% from that day. Then, it's kind of been meandering here. Well, things just don't go straight back down. I feel like this meandering here is now a battle between the bulls and the bears, obviously, where you've got people thinking it's going to go retest those highs. And you got other people saying, like me, that was a blow off top and now is the time to ring the register. So I think the bears could win this, but, it's hard to say. What is the line in the sand where you would say the bears, that was a blow off top and the bears, are going to win this little battle that we have going on last week.
Okay, and I will give you that. The good thing about this CoinMarketCap, you can go to historical data, and this is what I'm looking at. I'm looking at that blow-off top, and that high was, different exchanges have different highs. That's the thing that's really, really bugging me here. And so for this one, they had the top at 18,353.50. That was the same day that someone traded 19.5. So I really am not putting any stock in that. But since you hit that 1833 level, you've gone down to 1300. So 500 point move to me, it's like 1550, 15,500. That's the number I've been talking about with Jeff, and it's been above it. It's been below it. So you have a parabolic move, you have a blow off top, you have a retracement, and now you're just sitting here.
Yeah.
And now you're just sitting here, the consolidation. So theoretically, if you're short here, you want to use that blow off top, but it's consolidating. That's the best way. It's consolidating on lower volume. So that
how's the futures volume? Is it picking up at all?
You know what? I did. Hey, Spencer, can you check that? I don't have my Thinkorswim platform up. Do you have yours up?
The futures, yeah. Let me pull my TOS up on my laptop.
Is it going up from where it was Monday? Because Monday was pretty low. Tuesday is still staying low.
You're talking about volume?
Yeah. How many contracts are traded?
Let me see. Trying to pull it up. It's not slash BTC. What was it again? It was
XTC or XBT, isn't it? / XBT.
Good call. That's it. XBT.
Shy, you can help us out.
Volume. No, we're light. Price is hanging out. We're at 17,270 right now. So we opened
up. Volume be light right now. What was the volume yesterday? Was it higher than it was Monday?
No, not particularly. We're pretty.
I just got this, you know, and I've tweeted out. I don't think
volume is light.
I don't think the institutions are as hot for this as everybody hopes they are, and that's why the Bitcoin volumes aren't coming up. And if that's the case, what you have is this, you know, price has been driven completely by retail traders. And, you know, it's a retail rally, and, you know, everybody's talking about it. But if the big money doesn't come in, what's going to continue to be the driver? That's, you know, what, and it's all about supply and demand. You know, you can value it however you want to value it. I value it at nothing because I can't figure out how to value it. But, you know, if you want to just, you know, value is all about, you know, and price is all about, you know, more buyers and sellers, buyers coming in, taking out the, you know, the aggressive buyers, taking out the passive orders and the books. And I just don't know what the next catalyst is to drive it. Is it going to be, you know, this next, you know, because every single person on my Twitter stream is talking about it. There's an article being published about it, probably 5 a minute. You know, everybody's talking about this. I don't see what the catalyst is to take it to the next level here, unless it's institutional money coming in.
Okay.
And if that doesn't happen, then I don't know.
Let me interject. Okay. First of all, the Bitcoin contract at the CBO is for the little pikers. Okay. It's one Bitcoin. The contract coming out at the CME is going to be 5 Bitcoin. So I think the big boys are laying in the grass here waiting for the contract.
When do they come out the CME?
Monday.
All right, so we're going to get more information on this on Monday. So it's all just, you know, trying to figure it out, you know, using, you know, if you're a one-trick pony and you like your technicals, you know, use your technicals. We gave you that case. I like to use a combo. I like to use, you know, my thought process. Technicals is one tool in my toolbox. Everybody knows I'm not a one-trick pony. You know, I like order flow. I like to think about where the demand is coming from and, you know, what's going to drive it to the next level. You know, and that's how, you know, I just say, you know, whether I should trade it or not. I can't invest in it because I don't know how to value it. I've said that already, and nobody's been able to help me on the value. Some people like Peter Schiff have said it's valued at zero. So, you know, and you know, I can't argue with that because there's no numbers to crunch. So I can't come up with a value. But all I'm saying is if you're institutional traders, and it's not going to be an entire Bitcoin show. We're going to move away from this in a minute. But every big institution, you know who's behind, you know, making those calls is CFAs. They've got chartered financial analysts sitting there crunching numbers. You know, you could think it's all just technicals, but institutional money is still on crunching numbers, doing, you know, your homework there and coming up, you know, think about all your analysts. Ratings. They're not, you know, some people might incorporate some technicals into it, but for the most part, they're sitting there pushing, you know, their numbers, crunching them, and, you know, in traditional finance ways. And you can't do that on Bitcoin. So I'm not sure any of these guys who have CFAs behind them are coming. That's my argument.
Okay, just a final thing. We are adding a representative from the Bitcoin Investment Trust to the show, Michael Sweet. Sunshine. And, man, Spencer and I talked to him yesterday, and he is a sharp cat, man. And he is ready to go toe-to-toe with you, Dennis. and with Peter Schiff. He really, I was very, Spencer, do you agree? I mean, that was just a great conversation yesterday.
Yep. And this okay. is this is a guy, a representative from Grayscale, and they're the ones behind GBTC. So they're going to be able to talk about that.
Okay, so that's all going to happen on Tuesday. So you can't miss that show on Tuesday.
But let's move on from Bitcoin because we've now spent 10 minutes.
Let's move on from Bitcoin. You know, you got the riots and all those that we can talk about those as well. And they've, you know, Riot had a riot there, you know, the last couple of days. Sold off yesterday pretty hard. It's bouncing a little bit here this morning. But these things here, I don't know. Long term, I don't know about these things. You know, company is a biotech company, changes name, put blockchain, and everybody gets hot. Everything gets hot for a while. And eventually it cools. When the bubble bursts, usually that's it. Riot already had a big burst, and then it actually got a second one. So who knows? But I don't know. Quick technicals on Riot, and then we are completely moving on from Bitcoin.
I'm just going to say the old time close. No, no, it's not the old time closing high. Because when it was a biotech, it was higher. I'm keeping an eye on 2820. That was your close. This has been the recent close of the move. It blew off to 3327 on Tuesday, closed at 2820. Did not see that level yesterday. So that's what I'm, you know, in order, you know, if I was long, man, the longer it takes to get back up to 2820, the more I would think about hitting a lower bid. If it breaks out above 220 on some 2820 on nice volume, then it's good to go north.
All right. Let's talk the deal from this morning, and that is official. Disney acquiring some assets of Fox. Fox down here on this. And if you were listening to the show yesterday, we were saying and hinting, and not even hinting, we were flat out saying that I think most of the good news was priced in. That was absolutely the case because Fox tanked yesterday. It's down here again on this. What is the official news here on the Disney Fox deal, Spencer? Yeah. And what are they getting?
PR came out at 7 a.m. They are, first of all, a price tag of $52.4 billion in stock. So 21st Century Fox holders will receive about 0.27 Disney shares for each share of Fox A that they own. And they're getting pretty much everything except for Fox's news division and or most of their TV networks. So Fox News, Fox Business, Fox Sports, that's all staying on with Fox. Disney gets everything else. They get the movie studio. They get Fox's stake in Hulu. They get Fox's stake in Roku. Roku's moving this morning off that news. So they get pretty much everything else aside from the core Fox TV assets.
Okay, so here's my concern, and it was my concern ahead of the deal, is that how much debt are they taking on? Because I know Disney's taking a chunk of debt, and that's, you know, really, when you're evaluating Fox now, so you can say, okay, we're getting 0.2745. You do the quick math on Disney, you know, Disney is right now trading at 107 or whatever, 107.68. It's kind of flat on this news. Here, I'll just grab the calculator. So the actual ratio, go into the calculator. Bringing it up here, 0.2745 times the current price of Disney, which is 107.62, gives you $29.54. So you're like, well, that's pretty solid, you know. And you know, if you look at that, again, $29 in stock. And Fox A, if we're using Fox A, is currently trading at 32. So basically, you're getting almost the entire thing in stock. But my question is about the debt. Are they leaving them with a chunk of debt?
Disney is assuming $13.7 billion in debt. Fox has a grand total of $19 billion in debt. So they're assuming 13 of the $19 billion.
So they're leaving them with $6 billion in debt.
Yep.
All right. This is the scary thought for me as a Fox shareholder. If I own Fox, I'm short Fox, so I don't own Fox. But you know, that's just the trade in me. I shorted into the deal because I thought it was mostly priced in. But okay. So leaving them with $6 billion in debt, taking all their good assets away. Have fun, Fox. So, okay, we're going to get some Disney stock. That's cool. You know, I got $29-$30 worth of Disney stock here. So that's really valuing the rest of the company at $3. You'd say, wow, that's really low because you get the Fox, you know, studio, or you're not getting studios, but you get the Fox, you know, TV networks, whatever, Fox News. But you got $6 billion in debt left with you too. So is there any value there when you start subtracting out the debt? That's the scary thing. And that's the CFA in me again, analyzing the numbers. You know, heaven forbid people analyze numbers anymore. But I think, you know, this is, you know, obviously still concerning for Fox. I would like to see them debt-free, and that didn't happen here. So I think that's another reason why the stock is maybe not trading higher on this deal news.
I mean, and also, I mean, look at the appreciation that you had, you know, running into the deal. I mean, you're down at under $26, actually, $24.30. You run 10 bucks in a little over a month. I mean, how much meat is left on the bone there, right? And it's a really complicated deal. And I tell you, like, you're reading all those things and you're talking about the debt. I don't want to own Fox or Disney. Just real quick, Todd.
I don't want, if you got Fox and you get Fox News and a couple of their Fox, you know, networks. Okay, the Fox and a lot, most of the TV still stuff there. But you have $6 billion in debt on top of you. So you took all. So here you are. Disney's taking all your good stuff, taking on a chunk of your debt, which is nice, but leaving you with $6 billion in debt. It's like, ugh. I don't know. That's my
I wouldn't say, as a Fox shareholder. I wouldn't say they're taking all their good stuff. They're taking some good stuff, but I mean, Fox News.
They're leaving them some good stuff. What are they leaving them?
They're leaving them. What's the exact number? Whatever their core TV assets are, I think it's like 23 networks is what they're leaving. 28 TV networks is what Fox, the new Fox, will be.
Well, do we know what those networks are?
Yeah, Fox News, Fox Business, Fox Sports One, the Big Ten Network. Those are the big ones. There are other smaller ones.
Now a TV station. That's it.
More or less. And also, I mentioned that Disney now gets Fox's stake in Hulu. Disney already had a 30% stake in Hulu, so Disney now has a majority share of Hulu's ownership. And then they also get Roku's. They also get.
They
Fox.
Took that from them too.
Yes, and they also get Fox's stake
they
in Roku.
Clean them out.
Yep.
Do you know why this is not a good deal on the TV end, Fox Business?
Why?
Because when Benzinga Business TV goes live, no one's going to watch it. They're
taking
just not
Fox
gonna,
out.
Yeah, we'll just take Fox
pre-market
out
prep forever.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a this. Let me real quick. Disney technicals on that. Street is just they're taking a breath here and they're evaluating the merits of the deal. You're opening up into resistance, two highs at 107.83 and 108.19. Call 108 the number on the upside. On the downside, matching lows, 106.58, 106.75. So let the street figure out if it's a good deal or a bad deal, and then I would play it. But right now, digestion of 14 cents, I'd go with the breakout either way.
Okay, so we've now analyzed the hell out of the Fox. So we've done Bitcoin and we've done Fox Disney. Let's go on to our only big earnings stock of the day. That's Pier 1 Imports from last night. I played this into the report. I even said – no, not into the report. I played it ahead of the report.
How
and
come?
I said this because here's my train of thought here, and I said this yesterday on the show, and I said I was long yesterday. So I played it long overnight yesterday, or overnight 2 days ago, because I'm like, they've been loving retailers. They're going to buy this ahead of the report. That's the only call I was making is that I thought it was going to run up ahead of the report. It exactly did that. Look at the candle yesterday. It went from 546 all the way up to 592. That's like an 8% move for your stock in one day. So I actually, you know, scalper blood me. I sell too soon. I sold around 570, but it was a good trade. I made like 25 cents on a $5 stock, had it just overnight. So I'm out. I did not want to hold it into the report because, first of all, I'm not a big believer in their, what you'd say, wicker chairs, candles, and everything that they sell.
Pottery.
Secondly is, you know, if there was any retailer that was going to disappoint, I think it was going to be that retailer. So, and it ran up into the report. So I don't like still holding stuff that runs up into the report at all. If it was selling off in the report, maybe I would have had some guts to hold it. But I sold it, obviously, yesterday around 10 a.m., like just shortly and after the open, after it started to run up a little bit there. It would have been better to hold it all day in hindsight. But that was the play. And, you know, then I'm hands off. I'm not going into it in the report. Report comes out, Spencer details.
Yeah, it was not a good one, I'll tell you that. Q3 EPS of 9 cents versus 11 cents. Sales of 469 versus 466 million. So the Q3 numbers were okay. They missed, but they weren't awful, as bad at least as the guidance. Q4 guidance coming in very light. EPS guidance 16 cents to 24 cents. The estimate was at 38 cents. Missed that by a lot. Sales guidance or sales growth 1-3%. They see comps down about 2%. Fiscal year guidance extremely light as well, and they see sales are as flat for the fiscal year.
It doesn't sound good. Only thing good about this is it's a retailer and retailer's been hot and you have major support of $4. I don't know what the pre-market low is, Joel. Have you seen where the how low this thing is?
Yeah, I was just I just put a note in there for Spencer. I mean, here you are. You're skimming at the bottom at the low of the move. Pre-market low is 420. And just go to your monthlies here, and you could just see all these monthly lows.
So many.
August, September, October, November, all at the $4. Is it a good place to get long? I don't know. If you're short, you're caught short into this month rally. I'm bringing it in. And yeah. If you
what's the short interest, Spencer? That's a good question.
Throw me under the bus here. Hold on one second.
You're quick.
He's running the charts today.
He's quick at that pro.
Give me a second. I have to find it. Short interest.
I wonder how many people are bringing it in today.
Gosh.
You see how we use all the different tools in your toolbox? That's what trading's all about. Not one tool in your toolbox. Many tools in your toolbox.
Give me
Benzinga Pro being one of them.
My browser is being slow, so give me a second. So come back to me on that.
All right, we'll come back to you on the short interest there. But just analyzing here, $4, like I agree with you, Joel. I think if you're short it, I think you're covering there, and that could be enough to make the stock bounce in that level there. So down 25%, coming into support here, I'm not selling in the hole. And, you know, with the retailers have been, some of them have actually bounced back after disappointing reports. I may even try it for a bounce playoff four, but I'm not getting married to this position because I think long-term Pier 1 imports still in a hell of a lot of trouble. Dr. J saying
short interest is 12%, 12.7%.
That's not that high. So it's not that high for a retailer. So I was I was expecting maybe 20 or 30. So 12 is not that high. But in any regard here, the charts don't lie. $4, major support.
All right.
Jump over here. If you want to do the other earnings stock, there is one other one, and that's Sanderson Farms, and that's getting rocked. Here's just a classic example of a stock that had been running straight up, really. And if you look just in the last week, no, but if you look at the weeklies on SAFM, this year stock started the year down $100. It's $167. You know, it was at least before it reported earnings there last night. So you can say overall, still very strong into the report, really. It's a very strong year. They needed to, you know, say something pretty solid for it to go higher. I haven't looked at the details here, but Spencer's going to give them to you right now. Sanderson Farms, SAFM.
Q4 EPS of $3.20 versus $3.36 in the same quarter last year. Sales of $919 million versus a $911 million estimate. So they beat the sales estimate, and year-over-year EPS was down 16 cents.
The year-over-year EPS being down is not great. Say anything about guidance?
I'm not seeing any, no.
Okay. So SAFM, it's trading off $10 here right now. Not surprising that it's showing a little bit of weakness here because that report didn't sound that great to me. And we know just our algorithm, when stocks are running up, you know, at least, you know, having pretty good years, and then they come in below estimates, that usually equals, or, you know, even if they, you know, be coming in line, they usually sell them off. So when they miss, they're going to hit them even harder. So not surprising it's down $10.
I'm not even going to give technicals on this one because it's just like a bunch of odd lots are traded and it's $170 stock. But they just pounded Disney here. I don't know. The complete the acquisition, it just dropped. Or did I miss something? I saw it trading near 108. Now it's 106.30.
It was trading up at 109 when we started the show, and now it's down to 106. And you know, here's a situation where you are paying out a lot of stock. You know, you're going to pay out. You're assuming some debt. I mean, I don't know if what they're getting is worth that or not. So, I this is the market where they still do sometimes hit the acquirer. So, I'm not that surprised. I'm not that surprised that Disney's trading down. But I'm more concerned with the Fox side of it because they just got left with a lot of debt.
All right, real quick before we move on to Teva, we get a question here from Chef. Any thought on tea? And yeah, I have some thoughts here. It's trying to fill that gap. That was a gap that it had, 38.05. That was from the dividend. You did fill that. Now, when I talked about this yesterday, I said ganging up at a whole number. Maybe 38's the whole number here. 38.17, that was your high on Tuesday. 38.19, that was your high from yesterday. Two closes over 38. So the big boys are lining up here, not quite at 38 even. They may now because it's coming down to pre-market. But T, this is what it likes to do. It likes to turn on a double or triple bottom. So continue closes above 38. get above 38.20 and challenge the size at 38.50. But this is setting up kind of nicely. And Spencer, you got a question about AT&T?
I have a question. Well, not so much specifically about AT&T, but somebody please, for the love of regulation, explain to me how this AT&T Time Warner deal will not go through, but the Disney Fox deal will. Riddle me that. Explain that to me, because I don't understand.
And my specialty is an antitrust, not going to lie to you here. So I really have no idea if this is going to go through or not going to go through. I know you can say vertical merger, horizontal merger, say whatever you want.
This is as horizontal as they come.
I don't get paid to figure out that part of it. I just get paid to trade what the action is I'm seeing. I'll tell you, you know, if you want to take a risk, Time Warner is trading at a pretty steep discount right now, obviously assuming that the deal is not going through. Some of the media companies have come back. There's been arguments. I believe Guy Adami on CNBC has said multiple times, I respect Guy, nice guy, no pun intended. And, you know, he's been saying this thing, you know, with, even without the deal, is probably, you know, worth $85 on its own. So he thinks it's kind of a no-brainer when you get into the mid-80s. I believe that's what I heard him say on Fast Money a few weeks ago. I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't know if the deal goes through or not. I'm saying media stocks come back a little bit. It's a pretty big discount. Risk reward might be looking better for that now, especially if the deal did get pushed through. So, you know, but we don't know if they're going to have to do some other fun stuff or spin off some assets or do something to make that deal go through. So it's just a lot of unknowns. That's the bottom line with the Time Warner T deal.
Spencer, our media analyst here.
Well, I just haven't seen anything today on Twitter where anyone is questioning the legality of this deal. Maybe it'll happen tomorrow or in the coming days and weeks, but I don't get it at all. I just don't understand to me, but whatever. I guess we'll find out, you know, in sometime next year.
Probably in 2 years. This will go back and forth. Yeah.
I don't know.
This will be the longest saga ever. It's already been a long saga, so it could be a longer saga yet. This net neutrality vote, and Ed Parker just mentioned about this. I've been seeing this in my timeline here, too. What is that all about? Do you know that that's about Spencer's net neutrality vote that's going to happen?
There's a vote today, I believe.
Yeah, that's what Ed Parker's saying. Yeah, and I've been seeing it pop up in my stream, and I don't know anything about net neutrality. So tell me about, you know, what this vote is about.
Do you know what that means, net neutrality?
Not really, no.
All right, well.
I'm a stock trader.
Okay.
Well, tell me about net neutrality.
This will affect you, Dennis. So,
okay.
Net neutrality.
It doesn't apply to Canada, I don't think.
tell me about that. You know what net neutrality is, Joel?
The idea is that
it's a distribution. Go ahead. Of the networks and the bandwidth, right?
The idea is that the internet is a utility that everyone is on an equal playing field, right? What they potentially are going to repeal is that very idea. So then your ISP, your internet service provider, will be able to slow down the speed of certain sites and speed up the speed of other sites and make you pay more to get Netflix or make you pay, give you a discount on whatever, CNN, whatever they want. And your ISP will then determine the speed of certain sites for you. And they might say, you know, Comcast might say, well, we're in a feud with, you know, Turner. So CNN is, we're going to slow down the speed of CNN.com for all of our customers, you know? And the idea that the ISPs will then control the speed and dictate the true flow of the internet. And that's the idea of net neutrality, is that everything should be equal. It should all be a level playing field. And that's what it is right now. And that's what they might repeal. I think people are expecting them to repeal that today.
So Stock Hunter is saying that Verizon, AT&T have, you know, been up on this net neutrality stuff. And, you know, that might be the case as well. Watch these stocks.
Because they would have the ability.
They're talking Netflix, Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, all these stocks can move on this.
It affects everyone. No one is
free. Even me.
Even you, Dennis, yes.
All right, we'll see what happens with this vote. Do we know what time this vote is at, or we just know it's happening today?
I don't know. I should know probably, but I don't.
Okay. Well, we can't know everything, Spencer. Yeah. You know a lot, so we'll give you that.
Should we go to Teva? Is that what we wanted to hit next?
Let's move on to Teva.
All right.
You know, just Verizon, if you're talking Verizon, to catch a downgrade today, and that's why it's trading down a little bit relative to the other ones. I believe it's HSBC downgrading it. And full disclosure, I'm sure Verizon.
Okay.
I like to play these.
Teva moving a little bit this morning. We have some news that they're going to be undergoing some reorganization. They're going to reduce costs by $3 billion by the end of 2019. That's the goal. They're going to reduce their workforce by 25%, which would be 14,000 people over the next 2 years as well. So reorganization, going to save $3 billion. So they say.
So looking here at Teva, that's what they need. They need cost savings. They need all kinds of stuff. It's come off the highs a little bit here, though. It was trading up in the upper 18s here a little while ago, and it's now in the upper 17s there. It's a big pop for Teva. A lot of these, you know, a lot of these generic pharma companies come back. We know Mylan has come back a long ways from its lows. Teva has as well now, down $11. Now it's up here at $17.89. So it's a good pop for Teva here this morning. I always, you know, like to look at, you know, what's moving along with it. Remember, Allergan owns a big chunk of Teva too, so not bad for Allergan. I own Allergan stock. Do not own Teva. Thoughts here as we get this big pop this morning on this news drill.
Cost cut. Big. You know what? You can't ignore the volume here. 11 points.
Mil. Yeah. Remember, 11. It's HR too, so it's already trading active over in Europe.
Israel. It's an Israeli.
Israel.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's an Israeli company. Okay. I mean, you got real excited here when you went to 1894. So we peeled a buck off the high. So Dennis will not do a lunch with me, but I think the high of the day is probably in.
I think so too.
Yeah, that you got there. So what you want to do, you want to see that opening print. You want to see a climb into the 18 handle and just keep on going. After making that 1894 high, you had an 1863 high. And not a lot up here, basis the daily charts. You're getting into an area where it had a real bad day when it went from 1882 to 1608. That was in one session. I think that's when they had earnings or lowered the dividend. So I don't know. To me, I'd be a natural seller in the 18 handle. I mean, if it got really excited and took out that, that pre-market high, I still think you see more sellers in 19. Coming back on the downside, I'm just going to have to give you a little bit longer term view here. And I'd try and hold, see if this, you know, once the euphoria settles and everything, if I could get this thing under $17, that's just above a triple top from the last three sessions, that would be my buy area. Anywhere else in between, you're only buying this if you have a short up higher, but it's back in the 18 handle. See if we can challenge that pre-market high.
Really bouncing around, crazy volume, like Joel's saying. This thing is just whipping off the volume right now, 11.5 million. So let the dust settle. Let's see what happens. But obviously, you know, this is already trading active overseas, so that's why you've seen such an active market here in the pre-market as well. It almost looks like it's news is trading so crazy. A lot of ratings changes here. Just try to get a couple in here before JC comes on. Nike catching an upgrade at Argus. It had a huge move yesterday. We'll talk about that 1 second. Lululemon getting upgraded at Deutsche Bank. Tiffany up at Citigroup. This one's interesting. I want to go to this one first. VRX getting downgraded underweight at JP Morgan. And that stock is getting hit here this morning. VRX has been a monster move. And when I think about shorting Teva, I look at that VRX chart and I think, nah, thank you. Because these things can get pretty crazy, especially, you know, when they've been beat up as much as they were. We know VRX, you know, has been absolutely destroyed when you compare it to, you know, where it was, you know, just a couple of years ago. But, you know, in the last few months, it's really been on a roll. A lot of short squeezing in here. A lot of people, as they've cut costs, as they've cut out some debt, you know, that's what's helped them. Teva trying to do similar stuff. The debt's weighing Teva down. Debt was weighing VRX down. VRX kind of turned it around. So can Teva do the same thing? Maybe. But VRX chart here as we're trading down a buck on the JP Morgan downgrade.
This is the first. I just want to interject. This is the first.
Sure.
This is the first downgrade to VRX that we have in pro since today is the 14th. So since December 15th of last year.
Wow.
That was Morgan Stanley.
Wow. What did Morgan have on it?
They went from overweight to equal weight. So
okay.
Let's see. I mean, at this point, you're finding buyers above yesterday's low at 20.86 as your pre-market low was right there. So someone's still interested here. And I don't know if this is the greatest call by them, because what did they change the price target from?
They're going to underweight.
They're going to underweight from neutral.
Where were they?
Let me check on the price target. I don't. 12 to 10. 12 to 10.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, when
so
the
they
stock's
lowered
trade.
The price target even despite it running
I'm sorry.
Up $22.
I'm sorry.
They said, forget about
I
it. We're going lower. Yeah.
Hey, no, listen. They raised the price target from 12 to.
They raised the price
to 12 from 10. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just keeping an eye on yesterday's low. I mean, if they want to put the herd to this stock, let's take out yesterday's low and test the low from Tuesday at 2041. After that, you get the big drop to 19 to 21. But when you get a downgrade, doesn't even take a stock through the previous day's low. I don't know. I think the street might shrug this one off.
All right.
Can I just say I'm so annoyed. We're going to get JC Pretz right now, but I'm so annoyed with Windows 10. It keeps popping up, and it wants to do this update right now. I give it the time. Just pick a time. I give it a time that I'm not going to be around, and it doesn't update. What the hell's wrong with these programmers?
You know what I've been doing?
Here's the stock,
Microsoft
all the time. They're so dumb. I hate Windows 10. I almost just want to go to Apple products just because I hate Windows 10.
All right, we'll ask JC when he comes on if he has opinions about
Stop bothering me, Windows 10. I'm trying to trade stocks. I don't want to pop up when you want to do an update. Let's go to JC Pretz.
What's going on, guys?
JC, I'm mad, JC. I got this pop. Here I am. And I want to put you in this scenario because you're, you know, the technical guy. I'm looking at some nice charts. I'm, you know, just to get my groove here. And then Windows 10 pops up with an update. Oh, wants to do an update right in the middle of my chart.
Well,
what
you should
doing?
you should have already done your update then.
I've already done my update. I try to give it the update. It says pick a time. I give it the time. It just ignores it. It doesn't do the update at the time I want. I tell it to do it at midnight when I'm sleeping. And it doesn't do it.
These are what are called first world problems.
You're all right, JC. JC Pretz, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing good. Talk some charts with us. What are you seeing out there?
You know, they're buying stocks, they're selling bonds, they're selling precious metals. You know, we're seeing unbelievable sector rotation underneath the surface in the equities market. You know, when technology falls off, you know, industrials take over, transports take over, financials take over. You're just seeing constant just rotation while certain sectors and certain types of stocks are consolidating. A different group takes over for whatever the reason, you know, and we've seen some strength out of financials with interest rates going up recently. The industrials and the transports have, you know, I've seen some strength, and, you know, those were areas that previously had been a little bit weaker and things like that. So, you know, I see a market out there that, you know, a lot of fund managers have done well and many have not. It's been tough to keep up. And I think that, you know, based on where sentiment is right now, there's a lot of powder that's dry that can be allocated in the first quarter. And I think stocks keep going up. I think you still buy them. And I think you sell bonds. I think you sell gold.
You know what sector has quietly gone up and not getting a lot of media attention here? What about the airlines? They've taken off and blasted off into orbit in the last 3 weeks. I look at like Southwest Air. It's up $10 from where it was just a month ago. Spirit, I had that one in my investment portfolio, but I actually just sold it on this recent run-up. It's run from 34 to 44 in the last month or so. These airlines have been hot.
The airlines for sure, but it's not just the airlines. It's the whole transportation sector. Look at the railroads. Look at the truckers. If anything, right. The airlines are some of the laggards in the transportation area. The truckers have been leaders and the shipping companies, Federal Express, UPS. It's not just the airlines. It's really been that whole industrial transportation group. And, you know, it's nice to see them rallying in unison. But, yeah, 100%. You know, the airlines, too, look at something like a Delta, really just this huge, long consolidation in the DAL. It's really gone nowhere for, what, 4 years almost, 3 years? Yeah. So I think in the first quarter or even before that, we break out to new all-time highs, and we probably get a nice leg higher. But, you know, look elsewhere. Look at something like a CSX. Look at
big move there, too.
Yeah.
50 to 58.
That's exactly right. So it's not just what we're seeing out of, you know, listen, if it was just the airlines, I would be worried that the other ones aren't participating. But when you break it down inside, look at the truckers like J.B. Hunt, look at CHR Robinson, and the airlines, like I mentioned, look at Union Pacific, UNP, breaking out of big bases, even KSU, Kansas City Southern, which has been one of the laggards of the group, also breaking out. And then you look at the airlines, like you mentioned, look at the Love, the Southwest Airlines. You know what I love, guys? You know, when you have these quote unquote head and shoulders tops, right? And, you know, the reality of the matter is markets trend. So by looking for reversal patterns, you're essentially defeating the entire purpose of what we're trying to do here in the first place. And we heard a lot about this head and shoulders top in the Southwest Airlines that was taking place throughout 2017. That could not have been more wrong. And to your point earlier about the airlines, in the last month, we have seen Southwest Airlines ripping. And based on what we've seen, I think this is most likely just the beginning, and we're probably heading above 73 in the Southwest Airlines.
Nice. We are on the line with JC Peretz of All Star Charts. JC, I love following you on Twitter. You're just like, you know, prices, you know, people are trying to pick a top. They keep saying these things, and you're like, look at the price. The price is going up. That way, you know, don't be bearish when price is giving you an indication. What I want to ask you about is, you know, I mean, I have my method for coming up for different support and resistance levels. Right now, there's really not much to find resistance. I know you like to use the Fibonacci extensions. I mean, you know, where are we at? Can you give us, you know, any kind of, you know, how are you figuring your targets now that, that this market has just gone? I mean, it's not really parabolic. It's just slow and steady. What are you using technically to pick upside resistance levels?
Well, when we're in uncharted territory, right, we use a combination of measured moves, you know. So if we have a range-bound market, we take the amplitude of that range. And once we break out from that range, we essentially, you know, take the size of that range, and that gives us the next target, right? Add the size of the range to the top of the range, and that's our target. What we also do, I like to do when we see corrections, I like to and then we break out above again from that correction, I like to take the 161.8% extension of that prior correction, and the market tends to respect those levels a lot. But the truth of the matter is, it's not really so much like we want to be buying stocks like very aggressively across the board. I think the dispersion is going to continue to increase, and I think that I would rather be allocated in individual equities than in the market overall. So like last summer, for example, it was more like just buy everything, right? Like in the summer of 2016, like it almost didn't matter which stocks. I mean, yes, we like technology, industrials, financials, but it was really just equities as an asset class that looked so attractive. Now, the S&P 500 2650 was our target, and this has now been hit. So it's not like we want to be piling into the S&P 500 here as we're hitting our target. I think we'd much rather be individual equities, individual sectors as they rotate. Financials continue to look good. I like banks. You know, you look at something like the XLF, which represents the financial sector. We still haven't even gotten back to the 2007 highs. So just very simply, I just think we get back there, right? And you're looking at over $31. And here we are under 28. So maybe another 10, 12% higher in the financials.
No, I think Joel put himself on mute, and then he forgot to unmute himself.
Oh,
Joel, well, are we there? Joel's here. He just forgot to unmute himself. All right, JC, I wanted to get your thoughts. I guess we talked a lot this morning about the Fox Disney merger or deal, and how to feel about it. I said as a consumer, I feel great about it. As an investor, as a trader, Dennis and Joel, not so much. How do you feel about this deal?
I don't know anything about this deal. I'm a technician. Okay. So for me, you know, this, it's just, you know, good for them, I guess. You know,
okay.
I don't really pay attention to that sort of thing.
So JC, let's jump to the chat here. Multiple tickers coming from the chat. They all love you in there. First, Ed Parker's asking about Priceline here. He wants to know about the gap in the chart. Give us your technical thoughts on PCLN.
So Priceline, you know, I've always looked at Priceline for a long time as really one of the leaders in the consumer discretionary space, along with Amazon, along with Expedia. But then once we broke down in early November, you know, that just made the chart, you know, tough to deal with, and it just needs to correct. So for right now, I just think it's a mess. You know, if we're below 1800, you know, it's just messy. It's just not anything that I'd want to be involved with right now. We want leaders leading, not lagging. And this was a leader that we needed leading, and we're not seeing that. So, you know, for me, there's just better places to be. If you're going to be in the consumer discretionary space, I'd rather just be, you know, if you want to be in one of these monster one of these monsters, I'd rather be in Amazon, quite frankly, than in Priceline.
Also coming from the chat, Rob Hood wants to know about TEX, which is Terex Corp here, farm and equipment play.
You know, I got to tell you, you know, we have just seen just such a monster base, and this equipment overall, sort of this agribusiness sort of, you know, space has done very well, right? So, you know, I think that we could absolutely go and make another run for those 2007 highs, but, you know, I would want to make sure that we're above those 2014 highs. So I wouldn't be long this unless we're above $45. But, you know, we could potentially see a tremendous rally from there. So from a risk-reward standpoint, the Terex, you know, and I do like the space. So, you know, it's not just about buying individual stocks. You guys know I'm not a bottom-up guy. So I'm not like, hey, you know, nice shoes. What are you wearing? Who makes them? And let me go for the next half an hour, convince myself to buy it. Right? That's not how I roll. So for me, it's more like a top down. So if I like stocks as an asset class, terrific. Do I like stocks in the United States? Great. What sectors? And then once they decide what sectors are the most attractive, then we break it down to the individual stock level within that sector or industry that is showing that strength. So it's almost like owning the best of the best of the best, shorting the worst of the worst of the worst rather than a bottoms up. So I want to have the wind at our backs, not trying to fight the wind or the tide by using a bottoms up approach where they might not necessarily fall within the strong sectors or within the strong areas, right? See the difference?
Yeah, Tesla. Jamie wants to know about this one. And this is an interesting chart because this thing was at the lows, but in the last 5 days it's gotten in the middle of the range here, really caught a bid here and bounced off 300 again. What are your thoughts on TSLA?
You know, I like the Tesla. You know, we had a beautiful consolidation from, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016. Then we finally broke out at the beginning of this year and very quickly hit our target near 380. That was the 161.8% extension of that entire range. We literally just kissed it and have been selling off ever since. But I think the consolidation now has played out, and we want to be buyers of Tesla. I think we're going above 5.25. I think we're going a lot higher. Yeah. So as
how do you get that target? How do you get a 5.25 target?
That's exactly 261.8% extension of the entire 2014 to 2016 decline. So that would be the next extension target.
What's going on there, JC? Did you just do that in your head just now?
I do a lot of math in my head, guys. Wow. You know, it's it comes with the territory. We listen to a lot of music here, and we look at a lot of charts. It's kind of my thing, you know. I think we're going to 5.25. As long as we're above those 2014, 2015 highs, I think we're going higher. A lot higher.
Costco, COST, this one's kissing up near the highs as well. It's been on a monster run too.
Costco, it really has. You know, if we're above the highs from earlier this year, I see no reason not to be long. You know, if we're above that 183, 184 level, you know, I think that it presents an attractive risk versus reward proposition. I would be a buyer of any weakness. You know, anything towards that 183 level, I'd be a buyer only if we're above that 183, and I think we go to 203, 204. You know, that looks like that's definitely a solid target up there.
Tougher one here because Adobe has earnings tonight, but Dr. J in the chat wanted to know about what your thoughts are technically on Adobe. We know once they have earnings, that gets a little bit tricky sometimes, but thoughts just on the chart of ADBE.
Yeah, you know, for me, I like to stay away from, I don't necessarily position myself to take advantage of earnings moves. To the contrary, I'd rather be completely out of there or hedge out any risk. So it's not like I manage $1 billion. So I don't necessarily have to hedge out risk. If I don't want to be in something, I just don't have to be in it, right? That's sort of the advantage to not having $1 billion in assets. But, you know, if we're above 156, I see no reason not to be long. I still think we go to 250. But the risk is very well defined. You know, that 156, if we're above that 156 in Adobe, I see no reason not to be long. If we're below that, then I think it gets messy. But with a target of 250, you know, that's certainly an attractive risk reward. And also, it's in the right space. You know, it gets back to not fighting the overwhelming amount of evidence where the strength is, the sectors with, you know, it's not like we're buying, you know, a garbage stock in a garbage sector. You know, we're buying some explorer, oil explorer, and hoping that like now all of a sudden energy is going to start to outperform. It's actually, I'm not going to hate on energy. It actually does. It's starting to look a lot better. But the point is there's more hope in that market. While you look at something like Adobe, and we have a long way to go. So we got Dog in the chat now.
Yeah, Joel, what's going on over there, man?
What are you doing, Joel?
The dogs are barking.
You got a dog on the show?
What's the dog's thoughts? No, I kicked her out, and then she came back in.
is that the Benzinga mascot over
Joel's
there?
Joel's training from home today, and actually, he rarely does that.
I'm blushing. I'm blushing right now. JC, before we let you go, Bitcoin. I know you like to file things on a technical basis. You know, Dennis and I have been pounding our heads trying to figure it out on a fundamental basis. Are we creating a new asset class here or not, JC? That's my question for you.
Well, I mean, you guys are my friends and everything, but I'm not going to give you guys credit for creating the asset class. I think the asset class, I'm just kidding. I think the asset class exists. I don't think it's going anywhere. You know, what I like to say, you know, I'm lucky that I'm friends with a lot of venture capitalists and a lot of really, really smart investors. And what I've noticed in the Bitcoin space, in the crypto space, is very similar to what I saw in the marijuana space over the last several years. These VCs aren't just investing in the plant, for example, the marijuana plant. What they've been investing in is the infrastructure of the marijuana industry, the security companies, the lighting companies, right, the real estate, things like that. So it's almost like they're investing in the business of marijuana, not so much the plant. I've noticed something very similar in the crypto space. You know, while these guys are messing around, you know, with a little bit of money, which has turned into a lot of money, which is nice, but at the end of the day, their initial investments in the crypto space was more so just to get involved and, you know, not everybody. I'm just telling you kind of what I've noticed. Kind of just get involved, go through the motions. But I've noticed the big money has gone into the infrastructure. So for me, it's not so much like Bitcoin is a bubble or Bitcoin's going to zero. For me, it's more like this space isn't going away. Right, like we're going to be talking about this 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Maybe we're talking about Bitcoin, maybe we're not, but we are going to be talking about a coin or a series of coins. So yeah, you know, I like the space. We're fortunate that we've been very, very right. I would be a buyer of any pullbacks in Bitcoin. Anything towards 1,200, I want to be a buyer. I think we're going above 19,000, potentially even above 30,000. But then from a risk reward standpoint, you know, if we're below 11,800, then things could get messy. I would not want to be long Bitcoin if we're above that. But as long as we're above that, I would be buying any weakness in that area. Same thing with Ethereum. You know, as long as we're above 580 in the Ethereum, we want to be buyers. We want to be buyers of any weakness in that area. I think we go to 860. And then Litecoin, same thing. If we're above 300, that's the level, right? The 300 is the key level in Litecoin. If we're not above 300, I do not want to be long. But if we're above that, I think we could be long for a 50% move. So I think we got, I think the crypto space is here to stay. I look forward, you know, you and I, we've been doing this how long? We've been doing this for years. This you know, morning, this Thursday morning sort of, you know, pre-market prep. And hopefully years from now, we're talking about exactly this.
JC, it's been a while, but we love having you on. Thank you so much for joining us again, and we'll talk to you again soon. Have a good one.
Happy to do it anytime, guys. Have a good one. Go get them.
Yep. Thanks, JC. Always great to have JC on. All right, what's next?
It's always good because, you know, he's got, you know, that's the nice thing about the technicals. I mean, you can talk anything, and, you know, he's just talking technically, and, you know, he's analyzed even the Bitcoin from a technical perspective and saying, look, we get under 12,000, we could have problems. As long as we're above 12,000, so, you know, he always has his out defined. That's what makes JC a good trader. It's not even about, you know, he's got his targets, he's got everything, he's a great technician. But, you know, what really, you know, defines a good trader, in my opinion, is the risk management. And JC always, when he's giving you an idea, he says, as long as we're above this or as long as we're above that, he always gives himself an out. And that's what keeps you in the game this long term. It's the people who, you know, are going to buy Bitcoin up here. And, you know, maybe it continues. Maybe it goes up. And I hope everybody makes a lot of money in it. But eventually there will be a correction. Eventually there will be a top. We don't know where that is. Maybe it was 19,000 a few days ago. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it's going to be 100,000. Who knows? But you just got to be prepared, you know, when, you know, the technicals start to break down and the tide turns, it can get ugly for a while, and that's when you got to get out. So technicals do help.
All right. You know what? Teva, you know, look at back.
All the way back to the high school. I should take you on that lunch bet.
You should have, man.
Right now.
1914, that was a high, a pair of highs that you had back in October. So we're testing it. Nice move here. Save me a launch there. Thank you very much, Dennis. All right. We did do many imbalances at the 8:30 hour, and I don't think we covered all the ratings. Dennis, any notable imbalances?
Let's go look at imbalance land. Square. There's been a buy imbalance in Square for a while, despite having a horrible day yesterday. And, you know, I don't know if I'm a buyer of this bounce here or this little bounce we're getting this morning off the buy imbalance either, because I think, you know, I love my two-day move. And Square was in a range here for a while, and it broke down from that range. And I think Square is off to test those couple of lows that we got in November and late October there down in the 34 handle. I see this could lose another couple bucks, maybe as early as even today. But that being said, it's up in the pre-market, 80,000 shares to buy. There has been a pesky institutional buyer there every morning. So somebody is still a believer in Square. I'm a believer at lower prices. I like the idea of it. It's still a valuation issue for me, and I think it's caught in the hard place that I've talked about before on this show, where you get, you know, the momentum guys were all over this when it was going 40, 45, 50, almost to 50, and then the momentum broke, and the momentum guys are out. And the valuation guys like me say, well, it's just too, you know, expensive here. So that's where you really get the pullback there, when the Momo guys are out and the valuation guys won't step up. Valuation guys will step up eventually, but I'm not sure that is at $36.
And, you know, it's also like this one, you know, if you're retooling here and you're trying along for the first time, let's say you got this pullback, you're fighting the tape, you're fighting stock here, right? Because they've got all the way nearly up to $50. People are looking, oh man, if this get back to 40, you see how 40 became a psychological level. So I don't think you're going to have a rinse and repeat cycle that you did when it had the run before. And, yeah, I'm just keeping an eye. There's a pair of lows from December 4th at 35.90. You had your low from yesterday at 36.07. Now you're getting this upgrade here. It's getting away for a little bit.
No upgrade. Just a buy imbalance here.
Sorry. Buy imbalance. Okay.
No upgrade.
So I mean, I want to, you know, if you're going to try this from a swing trade perspective, I think you got to, you know, give yourself a little bit more room, you know, than 35.90, but to find risk here, because if it doesn't hold this area, I see some other spike lows, but you know, you could be trading another $3 or $4 lower. So that's my thoughts here on Square. And how big of, I mean, it's not, when you were seeing some buying balance, it was like every single day, right? It was consistent day after day.
It
after
still
day.
Is. That buying balance really? Is still there. Okay. So some institutions are just slowly buying at the open. I'm seeing it most days that has a buying balance still. And that's been going on for months. So, you know, it's just some institution that wants to accumulate millions and millions of shares, and they're probably just buying, you know, buy 50,000 in the open every day, or buy 80,000 in the open every day, or buy 100. You know, they slowly are accumulating. That's why these patterns, when I start to see the patterns and the imbalances, they're so valuable, because, you know, they can really dictate a move. That's a move that can push a stock up. I mean, it's getting a head start every day. It opens up almost, like, if you were just started analyzing it, still, even in this down tape, it's opening up a lot of those days. Like, it really has been. I mean, you know, if the NASDAQ's opening down, you know, heavy, that's going to affect it too, obviously. But, you know, and the Qs have a huge impact on this as well, and the Momo trade and everything. But, you know, other things being equal, if there's a buyer every morning, it helps to push the price at least higher off the open. There's just been sellers there, though, and that's, you know, just the fact that the momentum is broken on this. Nice. 97,000 to sell.
Wow.
That is interesting, but it is actually up, and I think that's probably going to flip, because this is trading up just slightly in the pre-market. Had a great day yesterday. It's catching an upgrade at Argus here this morning, so price target $75. Huge move yesterday for NKE. I feel like this is getting now overdone. I mean, it now broke out from the 60. It was in a 50-60 range. You could talk on NKE for basically 2 years. Now we're above that. That's good news for the bulls. You know, I think, you know, on a pullback to 60 is going to be buyers all over the place. But I feel like it's getting a little bit crazy here now. I don't like chasing stocks when they start to go parabolic. That, you know, isn't a Bitcoin move, but it's a parabolic move for Nike because this, you know, you can see we had this happen back. Just, you know, we have, you know, precedence here. If we go back into October, you can see we had a move from 53 to 57. After the big two-day pop, it pulled back and consolidated for a month. I feel like it needs to do that. I feel like we're going to get, you know, the stock up maybe here today again on the upgrade. But I feel like eventually we're going to get a pullback here. And maybe that's when you strike. I don't want to chase it here.
Yeah,
not for me.
Yeah, Nike, I mean, had that long because solid. We were talking about that 50 to 60 range, and it had the gap to go. Paused at 60, and then has been on just a 5-day march trading up a dime. You want to see it green and stay green on the session. Yesterday's close, 64.30. I'm looking at the monthly charts, and I don't see any resistance until your March 2016 high of 65.44. And, man, your all-time high in Nike is 68.19. So one of those retailers that has survived the test of time. All right. Dennis, Spencer, are you going to wrap things up?
There are other ratings I wanted to run through before we
sure.
go.
Okay.
So Citigroup upgrading Hyatt, Duke Realty, and then Essex Properties, Echo Sandy Sandy. Those all getting upgrades from Citigroup. Goldman Sachs upgrading GW Pharma to buy this morning. We mentioned the Nike upgrade at Argus. Southwest called an upgrade from Atlantic Equities to overweight. ConocoPhillips upgrade at Goldman Sachs to a buy. Tiffany upgraded Citigroup to a buy. Lulu upgrade at Deutsche Bank to buy. Those are the biggest upgrades that I saw. Downgrades we discussed. The JP Morgan Valiant one, we missed the gap. Downgrade at Oppenheimer. Verizon downgrade at HSBC. Goldman downgrading Spark Therapeutics. ONCE is the ticker there. Equifax downgrade at Barclays, and that's it that I saw. Anything else that you saw, Dennis?
No, you kind of covered the most of them. We already talked BRX there, Lulu, BioMarin, BMRN, catching an upgrade at Wedbush, price target 110. Yeah. That stock's been a little bit of a monster lately, too. It's up another buck and a half. One thing I will say is the biotech, smaller ones, especially when they get an upgrade, those things sometimes move fairly significantly on those. So just keep an eye if you are trading, you know, BMRN, be aware that's got an upgrade too today.
All right. That's it for us today. Thanks to everyone who listened to us on YouTube. Thanks to our chatters at premarket.benzinga.com. Thanks to JC Perrette who joined us. If you want to catch his services, All Star Charts. If you want to catch the podcast, you can do that on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. I'm also going to throw in a link to the chat to sign up for Tuesday's special Bitcoin show. It'll be an online, more of a webinar than anything else. We've got five or six guests lined up. I can't even keep track. We've got so many. So we've got a lot of people. That'll be on Tuesday's show. There's the link in the chat to sign up for that. And, yep, that's it. So on tomorrow's show, we're going to be joined by Ben Carlson. He runs the site A Wealth of Common Sense. Josh Brown was in our office about a month or so ago, and he said that Ben Carlson has one of the best finance blogs on the street. So we're looking forward to having Ben on. It's been a while. And that's it for us, though. So I hope everyone has had a good morning so far. Hope you have a good rest of your day. We'll be back with you on Friday.